The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member. And we don't mean your Aunt Dolores.
You stink!
The TNT Shop has it all. At TNTRadio.live. Interviews, news, and views. You're listening to State of the Nation with Brian McClain, Dan Mitchell, and Lynn Shaw on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All right, this is Brian McClain. I'm here with Lynn Shaw and Dan Mitchell. Welcome back to the show, Dan. This has been a really interesting and enlightening show so far. Great discussion.
Yeah, I actually want to bring up something from the news report that we just got about what Macron is doing in France. In France, the retirement age is 62. The average person lives to 82. France is almost bankrupt now. And if they don't want to go down the same path as Greece, something has to happen. So I like what Macron is trying to do. It's far from perfect. They should be going with personal retirement accounts. And I could give my sort of libertarian free market fantasy design for French fiscal policy. But in terms of avoiding bankruptcy and Greek-style fiscal crisis, something needs to happen. Now, I obviously don't think it should happen by just some sort of unilateral waving of a magic wand by the president. But in terms of who's right and who's wrong, the people trying to protect the current French welfare state, I don't think they understand how bankrupt the French government is. And with changing demographics, fewer children, which means fewer taxpayers, more old people living longer, something's got to give.
Interesting, you know, and France, Lynn, France is one of those places where the people, you've mentioned this recently this week, France is one of those places where the people actually get out there and say no when, you know, they see the government doing something they don't like. So it's a shame that gone this far, that, you know, it's led to this particular topic. But it's not the first one. If you recall the Yellow Vests protesting for like almost two years up until, you know, COVID came and shut it all down.
I'm agreeing with everything Dan said. And also 62. Oh, come on. Come on. That's young these days. That's like the new 42, right? So we have to keep that in mind. Now, to flip that over, yes, I want to reiterate that I do like how other countries, in particular, the media here doesn't ever show it, but foreign media will always show it. You know, they gather, they come together, 1-2 million people to protest. They stand up, they engage, they empower each other. And that is what is sorely lacking here in the United States. We complain, we react, we don't take action.
Yeah, we tweet, and we Facebook. Okay, well, let's see here. Let's look at California for a second. Gavin Newsom's been roasted for his tiny house plan. He's planning to build 1,200 tiny homes for the state's homeless population, and arguing that it's a step. Anyways, the Democrat leader is taking a backwards approach to the crisis and ruling with his liberal policies. Dave Rubin made some good comments. He said, well, I'd actually like to give Gavin Newsom credit, believe it or not, because nobody on earth in the history of the world is better at creating homeless people than Gavin Newsom, and he deserves credit for that. So he got a pretty big piece of pushback there. He also noted that Newsom, I call him the nuisance has ruined San Francisco as mayor and is working on ruining California as governor. And, you know, my thinking is 1,200 homes. What is that going to do? That ignores the roots of the problem, right? The roots of the problem. What do you think the roots of the problem are, Lynn? I bet you have a list.
Listen, that list is in my brain every single day. First of all, I heard a little birdie told me that Gavin Newsom is going to be the 2024 Democratic presidential candidate. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. It's just that little birdie, and not the Twitter birdie, told me about that. It makes a lot of sense if you really look at what he's doing lately, how he, of course, hasn't announced anything, but he is going after DeSantis. As far as these homes, there's also something where they can't clean up all the encampments unless they actually have a bed to put the person in. The root of the problem is the youth, not even youth, the overall mental health crisis with all of the drug addiction. That's what's happening. Now, the beautiful state of California, all of the people with a lot of money, They can move somewhere else. And that's exactly what they're doing. So less taxes, less money in the state. That place is becoming overrun. We all see it. We know it. 1,200 tiny little houses, some as small as 120 feet. What is that going to do? They're going to go in there and just, you know, use their needles or whatever they're doing. And it's just going to multiply and multiply. This is no solution. This is just a propaganda, you know, a PR kind of thing. It sounds good to some, but not to us here on State of the Nation.
Yeah, Dan, what do you think? $30 million being sunk into that. And I think Lynn nailed it. That was my list, too, at least the top of it. Out of control, absurd liberal spending, fentanyl addiction, meth addiction, lawlessness, that kind of stuff. And 120 square foot homes. What do you think?
This is a typical example of government creating a problem, then jumping in to make a problem worse. In cities like San Francisco, you're basically not allowed in the private sector to build new housing, zoning rules, permitting rules, things like that. Then there's a homeless problem, which of course is heavily augmented by the fact that government dispenses so many benefits so that people in effect get sucked into dependency and homelessness. And then the government says, oh, look at all these people that are living on benefits, living on the streets, not finding housing, not to mention, of course, rent control playing a role as well in some places. And then Newsom comes in and says, well, I'm going to build these little houses using taxpayer money. And if he's saying it costs $30 million now, remember how much the high-speed rail, which has never been built, has gone up dramatically in price, 3 or 4 times original amounts. So $30 million will really probably turn into $130 million minimum, won't solve any of the problem. And the thought that one of America's worst governors thinks that he should be president of the entire country, I mean, the only person I can think of who would be worse than Newsom would be Governor Pritzker of Illinois. But that's really a close race.
Yeah. No. We ended up with Biden, so I'm not sure. Anything goes these days.
It can always get worse, Dan. It can always get worse. They keep coming up with stuff that even we haven't thought of. But I agree with you. That was very well said, sir. Okay, do you have an upcoming community event, a rally, a march, a festival, or a fundraiser? Or do you want to gather a million people to march on Washington or your state capitol? Well, set it up. Let's do it. Let's be more like France. If you want to do that and you could do with some free publicity, TNT Radio wants to promote it for you. Simply visit the What's On Events calendar on the TNT Radio website and submit your event details, and we will do whatever we can to help get the word out here on TNT Radio.
News you can count on.
They break down the big story.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
According to a report by conservative U.S. news outlet The Federalist, at least two private companies have received large grants from the military to develop online surveillance tools as part of a coordinated censorship effort. Here with the story, joining us once again is TNT Radio News producer Adam Clark. Ruckus, we just saw this very week a Democrat, forget if it was a congressperson or a senator, asking a group, a Zoom call group, while doing their duty representing the people, if there was a way that they could suppress people from speaking in certain ways about the banking situation this week. So this is the kind of thing that really scares me when I see a headline like this and I compare it to a current event like that. What do you got for us?
Clearly, those people have not heard about NewsGuard or Peak Metrics, because they'd be all about this. So, yeah, nothing new here. We all understand and suspect this kind of stuff, but this is part of that revelation of the method, thanks in part to what's been going on with the Twitter files and the congressional hearings. And now this adds to all of it, a little bit of icing to this nasty cake here. But yes, an investigation by the Federalist reveals that the Department of Defense is grooming for-profit media rating grifters to develop AI censorship technology for the U.S. government. I guess we should just stop there, right? They say that their open source research reveals this troubling development is driving the warp speed growth of the censorship industrial complex and several other concerning details. NewsGuard, one of them, it's a private company that rates news outlets by their quote-unquote reliability and reputation. for sharing, quote, falsehoods and misinformation narratives, end quote. If this sounds familiar to you, before a congressional hearing last week, journalist Matt Taibbi labeled this company as part of the censorship industrial complex. And he published an image of a $750,000 grant. That's a lot of money, if you ask me, award from the Pentagon to the firm. During the hearing, reporter Michael Schellenberger explained that NewsGuard uses its ratings system to drive advertiser revenue away from conservative sites or other quote-unquote disfavored publications. In an email to Taibbi, NewsGuard CEO Gordon Krowitz denied receiving government funding, stating instead that the government pays for access to its data. The Pentagon, he wrote, is specifically looking for evidence of quote-unquote Russian and Chinese disinformation. However, the Federalist's report today, Friday, says that NewsGuard received a $25,000 award from the Pentagon in 2020. This was because they won something called the COVID-19 Disinformation Challenge. And then a year later, NewsGuard was given $750,000 to develop basically an AI-powered database of quote-unquote misinformation networks alongside with the Department of Defense. From what I understand, I dug a little deeper into this. It included that they were working side by side with the government. There was some training. This was not just like a money here in exchange for a service. This was a co-opted, coordinated effort. It's really interesting. The other one that they brought up and featured was Peak Metrics. They also was another, they were another winner of that COVID-19 challenge. They earned a $25,000 grant to develop quote-unquote social listening technology for the military, and it received a further $1.5 million from the federal government in 2021. But even before that, the company had been singled out as potentially useful for the Pentagon. In early 2020, Peak Metrics took part in the Air Force Accelerator program, under which it developed, quote, measuring tools to detect misinformation campaigns, end quote. So this looks like some pretty serious smoking gun stuff here, folks. What do you think?
Well, are they
deputized?
Yeah, exactly. who elected these people? Okay, first of all, I'm going to say this one. A $750,000 grant from the Pentagon to this firm. That right there, and on that's just to the first one there, the one doing the warp speed growth there, NewsGuard. I'm very familiar with NewsGuard. I've been subject to their censorship. I assume I've probably also been subject to Peak Metrics censorship because I speak about all these topics, and I've felt their censorship. I've been in the iron grasp of it. And for my tax dollars to be going to programs like that, that is inherent in the very definition of socialism. We do not live in a representative government. When my own tax dollars are taken from me and then used against me and people like me to suppress our very First Amendment right, our God-given right, F them. That's what I got to say.
I'm right there with you. So we might as well just say they're proxy agents, you know, for the Pentagon or whatever, because that's what these censors are. They should just put that out there. One sentence. That's it. Very frightening.
And there's something else we should say, which is that the federal government has too much money. If they're giving out grants like this, things that have nothing to do with core functions of the government as outlined in the Constitution, that's just a sign that anytime you give politicians money, they're going to figure out ways to waste it. And when they waste it in ways that wind up, in effect, the government putting its thumb on the scale in terms of the national debate, that's just adding insult to injury.
Disgusting. Yeah, we need that really money for our education system across the United States and to pay teachers more money and to get everything back on track right here with kids and all that. So,
right. I mean, every day I think we're going to identify or flag up a government program, a socialist oriented government program with political interests in it, that could be just have a red line stricken right through it and an audit and maybe even some court proceedings attached to them, because this is just this should be considered treasonous and highly illegal to take American citizens' money and use it against them to shut down their free speech. You mentioned the COVIDian censorship there and how that's happening on AI-powered databases. We experienced that too. We experienced all that stuff. Everybody that had their YouTube channel shut down or got three strikes on it because they were trying to have honest discussions about this, a health topic, you got to be kidding me. That's disgusting.
Right. And you're not even told why you're shut down. You know, you're just gone.
Yeah.
That's the kind, or you're demonetized, or yeah. Right. And there's community standards. I've actually retweeted from good outlets, not even anything about a vaccine, COVID, nothing. And I will get these notes. I've gone against community standards. I didn't even write it. You know, it'll be from, you know, Vanity Fair or something. So that right there tells you a little something wrong. Perhaps names are on lists or whatever, but that's a whole other program. But this is very frightening. And I'm sure the American public, they have not a clue about this. They don't know this. They don't know where their taxes are going. It's our job to let them know about all of this and educate them.
That's what occurs to me, too. You know, they don't talk about this, the Twitter files in the mainstream media, do they, Dan?
No. When you have an advantage, when your side has an advantage, you quietly exercise that power. And as I said before, you want to put your thumb on the scale and, in effect, suppress. I write every day. That's my job. I'm sure I make mistakes. In a free society, when I make a mistake, it's the job of the opponents on the other side of the debate to point out where I've made a mistake and to go after me. Healthy, free exchange. Let the best side win in an open contest of ideas. Don't have politicians and bureaucracies sort of going through the back door to try to suppress people. I don't care if someone's wrong 98% of the time. Let them speak. Now, admittedly, yeah, there's a separate issue of, okay, well, Twitter's a private company, but if it's a private company working hand in glove with the government, well, then, you know, where do you draw the line between government coercion and a private company exercising property rights?
I agree. And I think that the line was crossed. That was an argument that they held for years and years. And that line was crossed when the Twitter files came out and validated what everybody was saying, what was happening in the background, and not only validated it, but showed that it was much, much worse, that these tech companies are an arm of the government and they should be considered a piece of the government because they're using our tax dollars. They're getting our tax dollars and using them against our free speech under the guise that they're a private company and they can do whatever they want. Like you just walked into their restaurant with a, without shoes and a shirt or something. You know what I mean? This is they are apples and oranges situations. They absolutely are.
Well, let me just throw in with the work I do with children, yet big tech will never, never, never censor what we call CSAM, child sexual abuse material online, which is on every single platform. They just won't censor any of that. They're allowing minors. If you know where to look, you can find it. And I find that's what we fight for. So I find it incredibly, horrific that that's allowed. But yet, if you talk about a vaccine or actually, quote, health or science, you know, told to follow the science, you want to follow the real science, you know, you're censored. So unbelievable.
Yeah. And it's tough to believe. Ruckus, anything else on this before we go?
Yeah, unfortunately, there's one more bad piece of information that was gleaned from this, so I feel it's important to share. Not only is this suckling off of the taxpayers' teats, as it were, the prize package that they won back in 2020, each of these companies from the COVID-19 Disinformation Challenge, they're also teaching them how to do this. They included the opportunity to learn the ropes of profiteering by participating in a government contracting 101 session. So they teach them how to score more of your tax dollars for God knows what. There you go.
Oh my gosh.
Some kind of Ponzi scheme going on there or something. It's like,
yeah, I know. I've been in some of those meetings, you know, where they do that kind of thing. For example, like how to apply for a government job. And it's funny, you know, like as a, you know, if you haven't experienced those things, you might think, oh, well, okay, this is like a workshop. But it's so stupid when you actually go to them. They tell you things like, okay, here's how you get your document not thrown in the circular file. Number one, write the entire thing with caps lock turned on. You know what I mean? It's like all this procedural, bureaucratic documentation things to get the document through the widgets that actually put it in front of a person. You know what I mean? So when the government says they're training people to do stuff like that, Ruckus, I think that's probably more, it's more process and bureaucracy oriented than it is like, you know, oh, hey guys, we're going to teach you how to profiteer on this. Nah, well, sort of, yeah, but they got to teach you how to do it in their style. And once someone has that down, whether it's applying for a government job through their usjobs.gov system or whether it's something like that, which I imagine is very similar, it's all red tape and process and documents, man. All right. Well, thanks, Ruckus. We're going to let you go, and you have a great weekend, and we will do it again next week. That's Ruckus, everybody. You're listening to State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Chris Smith.
The latest policy stance delivered by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis this week on Ukraine. Now, this will upset the mainstream. He does not want the United States to keep funding Ukraine's defense against Russia's invasion. Now, given the fact that he's got a good chance of becoming the next president, this is quite significant. He will withdraw aid to Ukraine. Now, before you all kick up a stink, I agree with DeSantis because it's Europe, not the United States, which should be pitching in the most, and they are not. What is wrong with many of these European giants? It is in their backyard. It's not in the backyard of the United States. It's certainly not in the backyard of Australia. They always leave it to the United States to mop up their mess. Well, if they couldn't contain Vladimir Putin, and I think that's fair enough when it comes to France, they should do and carry the greatest weight in their support for Ukraine. Interesting comments from Ron DeSantis.
Chris Smith on TNT Radio.
Google and Facebook, they don't sell you anything. They sell you.
Facebook constantly manipulates their users. They do it by the things that they insert into the news feeds. They do it by the types of hosts they allow their users to see.
It's what Google and Facebook are doing on a regular basis, by suppressing stories, by steering us towards other stories rather than the stories we're actually seeking. That's the real manipulation that's going on.
I was a design ethicist at Google, where I studied how do you ethically steer people's thoughts.
It will always favor one online music service over another and one candidate over another.
Google and Facebook has the power to undermine democracy without us knowing that democracy has been undermined.
There's what I call the creepy line, and the Google policy about a lot of these things is to get right up to the creepy line but not cross it.
Google crosses the creepy line every day.
Discover how society is manipulated by Google and Facebook. The creepy line at salemnow.com.
It's a conversation we have to have. It's a conversation about the state of the nation. Talk to us now from the U.S. and Canada. Call 1-888-201-6425. From the UK, call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
That's right, it is. Okay, I want to say hello to J.R. Blake, Mazzy, Emperor Ming, and everybody else hanging out in the live interactive chat over there at tntradio.live. Thank you for joining us over there. It's a pleasure to see you live listeners pop into the chat. And shout out to everybody in Discord as well. Thank you for joining us for State of the Nation. So let's see here. Lynn, we have a lot of stories on the docket today. Yeah,
I know.
To you? Do you have one you want to throw in here? And
I can keep going. Well, I want to lighten it up. I want to lighten it up a little bit for everybody. I want to talk about one of my favorites, and her name is Kamala Harris, and I actually refer to her as Chameleon. I just do. I always have. Well, you know, she went back to her alma mater, Howard University, to watch this NCAA men's basketball, this national championship game was going on or something like that. She was met with a lot of boos. People didn't, you know, appreciate her. But what I find so interesting is that, of course, they lost Howard University. She then went in the locker room. I don't know if either one of you saw this, and was giving them the rah-rah cheerleader pep talk. How great you are. Oh, it's okay. You lost. And all I could think when I saw this video is, this is our border czar. She can't even go down to the border and give our border agents their rah-rah talk or anything like that. And it is despicable. And it's despicable that media actually even covers that. But I saw it from multiple outlets today. I guess the good news is she was met with boos. That's something. I don't mean liquor, you know, boo-boo, that kind of, you know. So that was some good news. No, but also, you know, it's such a slap in the face because we also had our Homeland Security Secretary, Mayorkas, and he was Jen Psaki. Remember her from the Biden administration, her press person. And she's now on MSDNC, as I like to call it, with her new show. And they were all out in Washington at a very expensive restaurant partying two nights ago and taking all kinds of pictures like they're big celebrities. And this is just horrific that this is what these people do. And I can't help but go back to, you know, like families. I can't imagine a family. They're probably not looking at any of this anyway because they're too overwhelmed and worried about everything. You know, seeing these people, it's such a slap in the face to the Americans.
Lynn, I have to step in and argue on behalf of the lizard American community. How dare you insult chameleons by associating them with Kamala Harris?
You're probably right,
Dan. On behalf of chameleons and geckos everywhere, you really should apologize for that.
You know, yeah, you're probably right.
Beautiful common house geckos out here in Texas.
Look at you two ganging up on me. I see what's going on here.
They like to sit on the brick walls. They just blend right in. So, yeah, don't
I've
don't
always thought of
shame.
Her. Oh, right. Well, I've just always thought of her, just that I've given her that name, but she is just out of control. And again, it is so shocking that where are all those feminists? I always bring this up. Where's all this women empowerment? Where is all this coming together, you know, showing our girls? There's nothing. This is the woman that is representing all of us. I decided this morning, because I always say there is a war on for our children, which indeed there is a war on for our children. But then I decided, you know what? There's really a war on for women. Think about sports. They want the boys in sports. A very good friend of mine, daughter at a Christian university, all girls. They're having a course presented to them next week by a priest called White Christian Privilege. Let's talk about it. And so then, you know, it's attack on everything with girls and women. And I don't understand where all the big mouths are in Hollywood, all these other ones, even women in government, both sides, not talking enough about it. That I do not understand. I'm always talking about it, but I'm like a lone ranger. I'm always talking about it. But
yeah,
they're not doing it. They're not doing anything. I know. Yeah, I got to have two men help me with the women's issues because the women don't get on board. And it's frightening because the kids don't know in high school. Another private high school here in the city, the daughters were asked to write a paper about their white privilege as well. And the mothers were horrified. And I said, well, what are you doing about it? Go into the school as a group, not single. Go in as a group. Demand to know what this is about. And then I said, well, what do the kids think about it? They're 15, 16. And they all said to me, they don't know any different. And see, that's the problem. They're growing up in this bubble, this indoctrination. And I said, oh, so they want to write the papers? And the mothers are like, well, yeah. I said, well, then, you know, you got to, and then you can't tell parents what to do, really, right? There's parental autonomy. But they're asking me, help, what do we do? Form your group, go into the school, at least talk to the administrators, at least do something as opposed to, again, the react, not take action.
They're doing the step one, which is so simple, something G.I. Joe taught me when I was in fourth grade. Knowing is half the battle. It really feels like a lot of these parents didn't really know what the echo chamber was of indoctrination and media was doing to their children until they started seeing things like this.
But don't both of you see it just speeding up before our eyes? Like even in the last year, even did you see Rachel Levine? Who said that in 2024, the full push in the Biden administration, this is what she said, will be this normalization of, it's now called gender affirming. You know, nobody uses trans too much. They've changed it to gender affirming, and they're going to go full in on all of this. So the children are truly under attack, and the parents have to understand what's going on. And they're not. And that's the shocking part to me.
Yeah. Dan, I want your comments on this too, but let me take a quick headline here. We will be right back with State of the Nation on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio News.
This is news.
Here we go.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. The Pentagon has released video footage of a Russian fighter jet dumping fuel on a U.S. surveillance drone over the Black Sea and then colliding with the aircraft during a second approach on March 14th. The leaders of Japan and South Korea have agreed to restore bilateral ties, including the complete normalizing of a military intelligence sharing pact to counter North Korea's nuclear and missile threats.
Free speech is in our DNA.
Experimental vaccines will never change that.
Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Yeah, even there. Never miss out on the news and views of the big issues of the day. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio.
Or download the TNT Radio app for free.
From the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk. This is TNT Radio.
Okay, Dan, I was saying knowing is half the battle, but I think Lynn made a good counterpoint there. We're so far down the path now. Maybe just knowing and realizing right now that you've got a 15-year-old who has accepted a lot of these tenets of CRT, DEI, and all this stuff that they're pushing in the schools so hard, and they're trying to figure out what to do about it. Maybe knowing is only, you know, is it 30% of the battle? I don't know. What do you think about all this?
Well, part of me wants to answer by making an argument for school choice, but you find in some of the more elite private schools that they're even more politically correct on these issues. Now, I've always drawn a distinction. I think most people, when they think wokeness, or at least most well-meaning people, they simply think it means, well, treat everyone nicely. Don't think poor, you know, and that's fine. That's exactly what our children should be learning. But unfortunately, when you get some of these school administrators and teachers with the kind of instructional material that they're being given, where you basically have this, if you're white, you're automatically a racist. If you're black, you're automatically a victim. You know, I don't think it's good to tell whites they're automatically racist, but I think it's far worse to tell blacks they're automatically victims, because that's in effect telling a kid you can't succeed, you can't achieve, you can't excel. And you see with immigrants from the Caribbean, from Nigeria, there's nothing stopping black kids from excelling and achieving with the right environment. And yet you're having schools with some of this propaganda, in effect telling them they can't succeed. And I think that's just, that's horrible. It's I'm not a big fan of George W. Bush, but one of his best lines as president was when he talked about the soft bigotry of low expectations. And I do worry that we're sending that message to some kids through the school systems.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really bad, you know, and it's accelerated to the point where people that have been in schools for a long, like, here's an example. Okay. I'll give you guys an example. There is out of California, there is a diversity, equity, and inclusion director. Okay. That's the kind of person that, puts these policies in place and oversees them at the brick and mortar level, you know. And she has said that she was ousted from her position for refusing to use pronouns and gender neutral language. I actually captured this clip of her speaking about it because I thought it was very telling. Let me play it for you guys.
So I was one of the people, I've been teaching since I was, you know, very young, as I mentioned. I was on CompuServe and AOL, and I had these groups, and they were learning groups, and I would, you know, talk about pronouns in that space because people couldn't see each other. And so to me, I was one of the early proponents, you know, on a bulletin board system or, you know, something of that nature, platforms of that nature. It was in my email signature. But as I began to work more in public spaces and so forth, this became not something that was being done to support students or to support others, to make welcoming spaces for others, but a mandate that was being made by certain people working from particular ideological perspectives. And it wasn't being done to help people. And actually, you know, many of my friends who are, you know, trans activists and non-binary people you know, actually said, all of this makes me feel uncomfortable because I'm constantly being demanded to state my pronouns, and it's like a mandate even upon me. And so I really reflected within myself, and I said, you know, this has become something quite different than what it was in the early 80s and 90s, you know, when I was actively promoting that. And now to have, you know, people saying, you should do it, it should be in your syllabus, not you should, you must, you must profess them on your Zoom, you know, tile, in your profile, on your learning management system, everywhere, anywhere, you know, you must do it. Whenever something becomes a mandate like that, it becomes questionable to me. And I encourage people to think critically at all times.
Yeah. So, you know, we got to wrap this and go to break pretty soon here. But I thought that, you know, what you said there, Dan, she's echoing. That's Dr. Tabia Lee, former DEI director at De Anza College in California. And she's someone that I think is embodying what you were saying right there, you know, who was looking to make a safe space, someone who's clearly a liberal-minded person and who has watched this go too far. And she points out a similar thing about her trans activist friends and LGBTQ friends, because they feel much like many of our African Americans do in this country, where it's like they have to play victim all the time. They have to, you know, abide by the dogma of this, you know, this identity politic. It's just, it's bad across both sides, it seems like.
Yeah, we should be empowering people to be independent. We should be empowering them to think for themselves. We should be telling them they can achieve and encouraging them to work hard. But this whole, let's make everyone a victim, and we sort of have this victim Olympics going on. I can't think that that's going to end well, including it's not going to end well for the people who supposedly will be the beneficiaries.
I agree. What do you
think?
We
have examples already of all that. It's not ending well with all of this, right? So we know it doesn't work.
We sure do. We sure do. And they won't talk about many of those examples in the mass media cartel, but we are not afraid of them here. We are welcoming all these perspectives. Okay, we're going to take a quick break here with State of the Nation on TNT Radio.
With his expert analysis and opinion,
this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen testified before the Senate Finance Committee today, and she admitted that the Fed's rate hikes played a role in the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank. She also admitted that Silicon Valley Bank received special treatment and that community banks might not be so lucky. Indeed, she all but said the quiet parts out loud. Hey, Heartland, and all you red state MAGA mutts, we hate you. In case you hadn't figured it out, we will contaminate your air and water. We will shutter your banks and businesses. We will kill off all your livestock. We will poison your fields. And we will smoke you out one way or another. We want you dead. Oh, and she also admitted that Social Security benefits will be 24% lower in 9 years when the federal government's retirement Ponzi scheme finally goes bankrupt. Not to worry, I've known since the 1980s that I and my generation were going to get stiffed on Social Security. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Great water infrastructure can transform vast areas of land from a dust bowl to an oasis. The Snowy Mountains scheme in Australia was a fine example. It paid for itself many times over in billions of dollars worth of agricultural production in the Murray-Darling Basin. In 1984, at the direction of the Queensland State Government, four of Australia's leading hydraulic engineering firms investigated a revised Bradfield scheme. Based on this study, the government's Office of Northern Development estimated the scheme would have a net capital cost of $2.49 billion and would produce an annual gross revenue, value of production, of $2.02 billion. Therefore, the scheme would pay for itself in less than 2 years. In recent years, Sir Leo Hailsher and Sir Frank Moore have championed a revised Bradfield scheme to divert floodwaters from northern Queensland into the Murray-Darling Basin.
The conversation continues with Lynn Shaw, Dan Mitchell, and Brian McLean, and State of the Nation on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right. There's been some talk lately on the State of the Nation here about how sometimes money is just the root of all corruption when it comes to things going wrong. And we were talking about the banks earlier today and why they're behaving and operating and making bets at the very edge of what they think is possible, you know, because of low Fed rates, that kind of thing, and what happens, all that. But, you know, a theme I've picked up is that money is very hard to resist. Well, our next guest is a shining example of not taking the cheese when the cheese has string attached to it, just disgusting strings attached to it. She is an American author, a filmmaker, a business executive, and a retired gymnast. She was the 1986 USA Gymnastics National Champion and a seven-time member of the U.S. Women's National Team. She wrote Chalked Up, which was released in 2008, which is something you might want to pick up. It detailed the coaching cruelty inflicted on children in the sport of gymnastics. She also produced the 2020 Emmy Award-winning documentary film Athlete A, which connected the crimes of Larry Nassar to broader abuses in the Olympic movement. But more recently, she worked at Levi Strauss and Corporation and Company from 99 and started as chief marketing officer and then worked all the way up to global brand president. She's been with me here on TNT before. I'd like to welcome back Jennifer Say. Now, Jennifer, I'd also like you to meet Lynn Shaw and Daniel Mitchell, making up the State of the Nation team here.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Hi, Lynn. Hi, Daniel.
So
I want to jump in, Brian.
Yeah, jump in here, Lynn.
I'm jumping out of my seat. I'm jumping, the clock's always my enemy. That's what I say. First of all, Jennifer, we have to thank you for all of your wonderful accomplishments. You really are a shining example of a strong woman and a mentor for young girls, and also your role as a mom and family. And I think that is something to be applauded across the United States. So I want to thank you. We thank you for all of that. I want to ask you about where, it's very simple. Did anybody stand up for you? You were so good at Levi's. You were bringing them out of bankruptcy. You were making it profitable. I live in New York City. Billboards with Levi's were all around Times Square. Who stood up for you? Where was Hollywood? Where was any of the other corporate women? No, seriously, did anybody come to your defense? Because I don't remember it, but I'll let you tell your story.
No, not one single person. It was a 2-year battle. I had, at the time of my, having initiated advocacy, which was from the very beginning, March 2020, that we needed to open the public schools. Everyone just distanced themselves from me. And it went on for 2 full years until I was ultimately shown the door. And the thing that's so hard is, I did spend 23 years of my career there. There were people that knew me. I mean, not just as a leader and an executive, but they knew my children. I had thrown them baby showers. I had weddings. I had been to funerals, for goodness sake, 23 years. You know a person's family. And yet no one, not a single person even said, even if they didn't defend the view that I took, no one even said, okay, well, she still has a right to say it. Right. Which I actually accept that, I disagree with you, but I defend your right to say it. Nothing. Everyone was silent. Friends that I'd had for 2 decades, I haven't heard from. I haven't talked to a single colleague since I left. The short answer to your question is no. And the reason is it's a cult, and there was this ideology being upheld. We can call it woke ideology for short. And COVID restrictions were part of that. And if you violate any tenet of this ideology, you are evil and must be banished, and we must separate ourselves from you. In the same way, Scientology practices disconnection, right? You cannot associate with anyone that disagrees with these beliefs and this ideology and this holistic belief system because they are evil. And that is essentially what happened to me. And I think that's the hardest part. I mean, I cared about these people. They weren't just my colleagues, they were my friends. And not one said, hey, we hear you, we agree with you, we defend your right to say it. Not a single one.
Wait, so even with the passage of time, where it's I think, become apparent to most people that your view was more appropriate. No one has come forward even privately to say, God, we're sorry that this happened, and it turns out you were right. There's no mea culpa by anybody?
No. Because even being right is not the point. I said it before I was allowed to say it, and that makes me very dangerous. I didn't read from company scripted talking points. I spoke in my authentic voice, and I said what I really think. And despite, you know, that company and every company saying they want brave, courageous, authentic leaders, they don't. They want people that read from a script, that read the approved script from, you know, HR and or legal. And I didn't do that. I write my own speeches. I write my own book. I say what I think. And if I get it wrong, I apologize. And so it doesn't matter that I was right, because I said it before the New York Times said it. And I said it before CNN said it. And I said it 3 years before all these folks said it. So I'm still toxic and still dangerous. It doesn't matter. And at this point, the other thing that I've done is I have violated whatever secret pact I was supposed to keep, not to expose the dirty laundry that that these woke stances are fake and no one really believes them. And it's really just to shield themselves from scrutiny and take all the money for themselves. So, you know, at this point, it doesn't even matter if I was right about kids in schools, because I'm a traitor to my class.
Wow. I sort of feel like there's a Monty Python movie in the background saying, she's a witch, burn her.
I do want to jump in, though. I do want to ask, Jennifer, I work with a lot of children, you know, with sexual exploitation and all, digital safety. And so I was very taken by the, you know, Larry Nassar story. Let's touch upon that a little bit. Because people always say to me, I can't believe girls don't speak out. I can't believe women don't speak out. How did that go on for so long? Because every day people will say, they don't speak up. They don't understand the psychological damage, or the girls don't realize, or women, what's going on. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I think there's two points I would make. The first is, these were very young girls. For the most part, you know, some of them were teens, but you, in gymnastics, you grow up in this environment of what I would call extreme coaching cruelty. And your world is sort of upside down as it is, because you're being emotionally and physically abused oftentimes, but you're told that you're the weak one and you're the problem. So you don't really trust your perception of reality. So if you go in and you're an 11-year-old and you're seeing this doctor who's this really well-respected doctor, right? He was hard to get an appointment with. The USA team went to him, and he says, I'm performing this medical treatment. You say your wrist hurts, and I'm going to put my ungloved hand inside your body to help you. You're 11. You already don't trust your perception of the world. He's doing it in some instances with the parent in the room, but concealing it. So you're just completely disoriented as a child as to what's happening. You know, it feels wrong, but he's respected. Your mom's over there. It's like, I report what? So that's the first thing is, you know, these kids are undermined on a daily basis. They don't trust their own perception of reality. And he's this trusted authority figure. And it's a girl, a young girl who mostly, a lot of little girls, myself included, when I was one, want to obey and please parents and, you know, respected coaches, et cetera. The second piece is they did. Actually, since 1997, every few years, somebody did come forward, whether it was to Michigan State University or the police, the police on Michigan State campus or USAG. I mean, we know now that three members of the USA national team actually reported to the FBI in 2015, and nothing was done for well over a year. But the first reports were in 97, and it happened every few years. But every time this guy, this well-respected doctor, would go in and explain that this was a real medical treatment, and nobody ever, no police, no FBI agent, no USAG mandatory reporter ever pursued it. They convinced these young girls that they were seeing it wrong. So they did actually report it. I know those two things sound a little bit in conflict, but there were a lot of reports if you go back and look at the history.
I remember reading that. I remember thinking, oh, the FBI is so complicit. That's my opinion, because nothing was happening. And yes, I do remember every couple of years somebody new would come forward, and then nothing happened at all. And I remember thinking, wow, who's in bed and with in, who here?
Well, know? And in the time between when Maggie Nichols, Ali Raisman, and Simone Biles, I think, are the three who reported in 2015 to the FBI, from the time that they reported till anything actually happened, and it wasn't the FBI that actually ended up making it happen. It was a local police officer in Michigan. 50 more girls were abused. That's the cost of inaction.
50 that we know about. The numbers are that's always right. higher well, that we... Of no, course. No, I just mean the num. That's right. the shame. That's the horror in all of this. Wow. And I remember they did testify not that long ago in front of Congress, like Simone Biles. So that added a little heft to the whole thing. And I guess Larry, I guess he's just in prison now.
That's right.
What's going on? What's going on with you right now? What are you working on? Anything? Films? New books? Give us some. Give us some stuff. You know.
Yeah, well, I wrote a book that came out a few months ago, which you alluded to, called Levi's Unbuttoned. So I'm still out there, you know, talking to folks about that. But I'm spending a lot of my time on a documentary film, a second film that I'm making, and this time directing with an amazing partner. We're directing it together. And it is about the harms to children from the prolonged school closures and other restrictions. Because I think, as you all know, I'm sure, at this point, the narrative is shifting in a very untrue way. You know, I get people say to me all the time, what are you complaining about? Schools were closed for a few weeks. Where did you live? Because my schools in California were closed for a full 18 months and disrupted for a full year after that. Everybody, you know, the powers that be that caused this disruption for children are saying they had nothing to do with it. Or they're saying, well, we couldn't have known. It was the fog of war. All of these things are lies. Children had disrupted lives for close to 3 years. We did know better. Many countries knew better and chose differently. And this was a catastrophic policy choice that was made by Democratic leaders in Democratic states and informed and influenced by teachers' unions and public health. And I want the stories told, and I want accountability.
Amen.
Wow. Yeah.
Living in the middle Absolutely. Of New York City, I share your, I think we're still closed here in New York City. It's like,
yeah, New York was really
it's
bad.
It's like 3 years. It's like, you know, so, and we know all these harms.
2 weeks to 3 years.
No, I'm right. not kidding. We were into like over 2 years, and then they would open for a while and then close down again. Ongoing.
And how did your family? Sorry. And they say, you know, in New York, we do feature a young man in New York who was experiencing this. Like they claim the schools open in the spring. This kid got 1 hour of school a week in the spring of 21. So I'm sorry. You don't get to count that as opening schools. Meanwhile, his peers in private school were going full time since the fall of 2020. They were able to play sports. They were able to get recruited for colleges. And this young man who comes from a more disadvantaged background, I mean, it's so sad to hear him tell it. He says, why didn't I get that? Why didn't I get to have the same opportunity as my peers that went to the $60,000 a year private school down the road? And now his life is very uncertain. So the stories need to be told, and I hope to do that. Anyway, you had a question.
I'm glad you're telling them. Also, all of this has fueled the youth mental health crisis that That's we have right. going on right now. How's your family fare through all of this with you? Because it's tough. It was tough.
It's a lot. I'm a lot to have to. I have four children, and two are older, you know, young adults, and two are quite young, 8 and 6. And we ended up moving to Denver so that our younger children could be in school. You know, it's not always easy when your mom is kind of bucking the narrative, and it's not always easy, but we are a close family, and I love all my children and they love me. And even when we disagree, we talk about it and work it out.
Perfect.
Well, yeah, congratulations on the courage. Imagine.
Yeah.
The courage is incredible.
Can I go back to the FBI real quickly? I know I'm being stupid for even asking this question, but did anybody at the FBI lose their job for dropping the ball and not following up on this? I realize accountability in government is a pipe dream, but were there any consequences for anyone, even a negative report in their employment jacket?
That is a really good question, I'll admit. I'm not as close to it as I used to be. I believe no. I believe the primary actor who failed to investigate from the Indianapolis office, because USA Gymnastics is in Indiana, Indianapolis, was retiring anyway. What has not become clear, and there has been no investigation into it, is why they did nothing for well over a year. And there is speculation and there is evidence that there were conversations between the head of USA Gymnastics at the time, whose name was Steve Penny, and this local FBI investigator, and that Mr. Penny had suggested he could get him a job with, you know, the U.S. Olympic Committee and security, and, you know, sort of influenced in that way. But all of this at this point is somewhat speculative and needs to be investigated. And that's what the survivors are asking for, is a true investigation. I should say nothing's happened to Mr. Penny either. And, you know, he led USA Gymnastics. He knew about the reports. There is evidence that he hid evidence and destroyed evidence that was at the Caroli Ranch. And he was, in fact, at one point arrested, but now nothing has happened. And there are others within USA Gymnastics that did his bidding, and nothing has happened to them either. And no one there has lost their job other than Penny.
Wow. Absolutely amazing. Well, we're going to pick this conversation up again sometime soon. Jennifer, we'll remain in touch. Thank you for being here today. We appreciate you. We appreciate your time. And keep up the good work. It's worth it. We really, really appreciate it. All right. Thanks, Lynn. Thanks, Dan. Great show, guys.